Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. Today we are kicking off our first in the conference preview series with the ACC. And joining me here today in studio, this is a first since I took over the College Football Podcast. Our first in-studio podcast is ACCSports.com's Jim Young. Jim, thanks for joining me in the Hustle Zone.
Well, you know, Chip, just like John Swofford, I like to make myself very amenable to the media's needs, and I hope that it will increase the payout I get from you.
What we're going to be doing, and to preview it, we didn't want to sort of run down any specific set of, you know, storylines or top five this or that. We want to be able to paint a picture of the way we think the 2012 season is going to play out. And then what we're going to do is we're going to do this with a little game called People, Places, and Things. Now, Jim and I each have a list of people, places, and things that we think are going to determine how the 2012 ACC season plays out. And I'm going to start with you, Jim. The visiting team gets to call it in the air. And what's going to the first thing on your list of a people, place, or thing that will define the 2012 season?
Not necessarily the first thing, but the first one just for segue purposes, which is what we were just talking about. I'll go with Twitter, actually. Yeah. As we know, Florida State has Jimbo Fisher has shut down Twitter for all of his players after some not so wise comments were made via Twitter. As we know, Twitter played a huge role in the ongoing mess that North Carolina finds itself in. Twitter got Chad Kelly and Stout, the backup quarterback at Clemson, into a fight in the offseason. It has it's a fascinating way now that players kind of go around the media relations, and we get to see a little bit more of how the sausage is made, and I'm curious to see, you know, what it will have in store for us this season.
Because you got to assume we're going to have at least one to three or four more instances where a player says something really, really dumb on Twitter, especially following a loss.
Or just really, really honest. Yeah. You know, I mean, on Monday morning, Logan Thomas commented that the new Virginia Tech helmets were ugly, which I believe he is correct.
And there's a lot of people believe that these little chicken feet that are going to be on
turkey
top of
turkey feet, man. Come on.
It's very hard to tell when we're just taking the biped. That's all we know. Then it could easily be chicken.
Well, if it was South Carolina, it would have a spur on that foot. So that's how you would tell the chicken one versus the turkey one.
Ornithological studies right here with Jim Young. Now, it's pretty funny because the other angle, of course, Jimbo Fisher says we don't need it as a distraction. The other angle is that Twitter's a very, very big part of today's society, and instead of trying to ban them, you should educate. And that has worked in some cases and has not worked in others. Where do you stand on that? If you're a head coach, are you saying, you know, here's how we need to handle Twitter? I mean, you're a Twitter aficionado yourself,
yeah,
so.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I come down on – I totally get – why Jimbo Fisher has done what he's done. I mean, the guy has, again, not to keep bringing UNC into this, but UNC is an example of there's a lot of stuff out there you got to cover as a coach, what your players are doing and that sort of stuff. Twitter is just one more thing you got to worry about. And I'm all for the freedom of speech. I like Roy Williams' opinion on that, that you want to teach these guys to be grown up and that sort of thing. But if I'm a football coach and I'm about winning games and I'm about reducing distractions, I can understand why you take Twitter out of the mix. As a member of the media or as a fan, I think it's great. I think it humanizes these players. I think a lot of times with media relations now and the tendency to want to control what these kids say, that it dehumanizes them. I think it connects players to fans in a way they've never had before. And it reveals, actually, Chip, I think that these guys are much more thoughtful and intelligent than we've ever given them credit for. We talk about the stupid things they say, but I think they say a lot of intelligent things out there, too.
All right, we're going to move from Logan Thomas, and I'll go to my first people, place, or thing, and this is a place, and I'm going to encompass the entire state of Virginia. Hmm. And I wrote a little bit after Media Days about not only how unique it is that there are so many elite quarterbacks in the ACC this year. ACC not really a quarterback-heavy conference every single season, especially recently. And you've got, you know, E.J. Manuel, Taj Boyd, Logan Thomas, Mike Glennon. You could toss Bryn Renner in there, all from the state of Virginia. And I'm going to paint a little broader here, if you don't mind. We've also got the fact that the Coastal Division, in my opinion, is a toss-up between Virginia Tech and Virginia.
Hmm.
You've got the Virginia Tech-Georgia Tech game in Blacksburg on Labor Day, where the winner of that game has gone on to the ACC Championship. And then also another game later in the season that we will get to that's taking place in Virginia. And it's just been interesting for a conference that post-expansion everything was supposed to be based out of Florida. This was supposed to be Florida and Miami. You know, this was going to be what's at the top of the conference. And it seems like, at least in the 2012 season, most of the elite games, players, and sort of storylines are coming from the Commonwealth. And I think that's a little unique. It's not something that, if you had told us that, you know, maybe 2 years ago, that we would have necessarily agreed with that.
Yeah, I agree. I'll go with a place as well for my next one, and I'll go a little bit further south to the Georgia Dome, which we've seen this movie before, Chip. Big first weekend for the ACC. Big chance for the ACC to prove itself. ACC falls flat.
Right.
Well, they've got that chance again. Once again, Lucy Van Pelt has put that football out, and the ACC playing the role. Well, for my purposes, I'll just go ahead and tell you, hopefully not playing the role of Charlie Brown. It's going to go out there, and Clemson's going to get its shot against Auburn. Before that, NC State's going to get its shot against Tennessee. Two very winnable games for the ACC. I think you could argue they should win both of those games. If they do, all of a sudden we change the conversation about the ACC. If they don't, I don't know how long or if it's possible for the ACC to get the conversation changed back the rest of the season. I mean, it makes that big of a difference how you do in those first big non-conference games as to how people, you know, how they view your conference the rest of the year. Once you're in conference play, you can't really change the way people view that, even if you are improving as a team. So I think that's, you know, it's the beauty and the agony of college football, but that first weekend in the Georgia Dome is absolutely enormous for the ACC.
And think about how quickly people turned on Georgia after losing to Boise State last year, and that was a damn good Georgia team. But, you know, they lose that game, they lose to South Carolina the next year, and all of a sudden everybody's throwing their hands up in the air, figuring the Bulldogs are done. Then they go on to win the East, you know, nearly beat LSU in the SEC championship game. I think both games are winnable, even without Sammy Watkins. You know, it is very possible. That's the other thing. I think that the Georgia Dome is also going to be very, very important to Clemson, who will, I mean, no matter what, you know, how inspiring Dabo Swinney can be, he needs to erase the memory of 70-33 from all the fans' minds, or else, you know, if they go in and get clobbered again, Clemson will be representing the ACC, just like you said, and if they go in and get blown out in another big game like that, we're not going to be able to point to Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech on Monday night and say, see?
Yeah.
See? Look how good the ACC is. It's just not happening.
Yep.
All right, let's see. I'm going to go. All right, we're going to get nerdy a little bit.
Go for it.
Okay.
Get wonky.
My thing that I think will be a key part of the ACC in 2012 are sacks per game, quarterback hurries per game, just generally quarterback pressure. I look across the ACC, I don't see a lot of great secondaries.
For
the most part, there's not a lot of elite, you know, secondaries. If I'm thinking about when I was filling out my All-ACC team, the hardest place for me to put together, I mean, outside of NC State, there's really not a lot of great ones. And then you've got all these good quarterbacks. And so in my mind, I'm thinking the team that is able to put pressure on the quarterback and be able to get in their face is going to be one of the teams that's going to be able to dominate defensively. And if you can't do that, you're just opening yourself up to this gunslinging between all these elite, even down to Sean Renfrey. I mean, if there's a weak secondary and you can't get to him, he's liable to throw for 300 yards per game.
Provided it's between the 20s.
Between the 20s, that's right, because he gets yanked as soon as it gets close to the goal line.
Could have been. That's down on my list. Could have been Duke Red Zone would be one of the places. But I'll go sort of the flip side of what you said, and four people to me that are of importance: Robbie Caldwell, Rick Trickett, and the two-headed combo at Virginia Tech of Kurt Newsome and Brian Steinspring. What these guys all have in common, they all coach offensive lines at programs that people expect to contend for the ACC title. And in all three cases, Clemson with Robbie Caldwell, FSU with Rick Trickett, Virginia Tech with Kurt Newsome and Brian Steinspring, the sort of yeah, but for all those programs is yeah, they look great here and here, but I'm not really sure what about their offensive line.
Yeah.
And so you just mentioned there's a lot of monster defensive ends and a lot of you know, teams out there that know how to get to the quarterback. There are a lot of really good quarterbacks in this league. So it's going to be fascinating to watch is can somebody – who's going to be able to patch together that offensive line that's going to protect that elite quarterback from those elite defensive ends just long enough to actually put some points on the board?
Yeah, and you look at that. That was – you know, arguably what one of, if you were to put, list three reasons why Florida State didn't meet expectations last year, mm-hmm. offensive line is
number one on
number
my
one.
List. Yeah.
I mean, it was the, you get down to a point where you've got four first year starters starting in the bowl game. You know, you hope that that means that they are more experienced back this year, but there's certainly no promises.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the big thing I have with Clemson is that offensive line. A lot of people are like, oh, look at that guy back. I mean, you can go through all the skill guys and all that sort of stuff, and I'm like, yeah, but look at that offensive line. I just don't know. That's the big question mark.
And another interesting note about Clemson, I remember last year, you know, they had all those injuries. Philip Price couldn't stay healthy. Mm-hmm. And I think it was I think it was Morris. He started talking about offensive coordinator. I think he was talking about Taj Boyd feels this phantom pressure. Do you remember this? He would talk about how, you know, all of a sudden he would just get panicky. And the last thing that you can have in that offense where you have a lot of options and it's up to you to make quick decisions is to feel like you've got this pressure pull, you know, beating down on you. And all of a sudden that's when Taj Boyd, towards the end of the season, look a little shaky at times.
Man, I don't know. I don't remember that comment. I can't believe an offensive coordinator would basically come out in public and say, hi, my quarterback has happy feet.
That's exactly what he said. I remember it. It was phantom pressure, and I was just like, yikes.
Yeah.
That's pretty – all right, so is it your turn or my turn?
I think it's your turn. I'm raring to go with another one if
all right,
you
go,
want.
All right. I'll toss it to you.
Because you threw out the word options. Okay. And when I think of option, I think Georgia Tech. And when everybody thinks Georgia Tech, they think Paul Johnson. They think option. They think – and then we had the debate every single year. Are they going to throw the ball enough? Is it going to be able to pass the ball? To me, that's missing the point. With Georgia Tech, it's what the defense is going to do. And so my person now is Al Groh. And when they brought him in, you know, Al's got taken a lot of heat, a lot of it deservedly so, for the job he did as a head coach at Virginia. But there was supposed to be a fairly universal feeling that this guy knows what he's doing with defenses. Well, it's taken a little while, probably longer than Paul Johnson would like, for that 3-4 system to kind of take hold at Georgia Tech. If this is the year, and Al Groh says it usually takes 2 to 3 years for that system to take hold, if it does, that team to me is your dark horse in the Coastal Division, because I'm an admitted Paul Johnson apologist. I think they're going to run. They're going to run. I mean, look at the numbers from last year. They still led the ACC in total offense, scoring offense, all that sort of stuff.
Leading rushing offense last 5 seasons.
Yeah, that part I don't think is going to change. They're going to get that done. Can they defend well enough and if they so that they aren't playing from behind and so that they can then start using these 12, 13-play drives and that sort of stuff, then I think they become a very dangerous team.
My question there is I thought that the linebackers, they were much more suited to excel in the 3-4 last year than they did. I liked the personnel a lot better. And then, you know, on the defensive line, when you're playing that 3-4, you got to be able to have a couple of guys.
That's been my question. Yeah. The 3 has been the question
for me
with those guys. Yeah, and they think they've got the, you know, the big guys you need. You know, you're not looking for Brandon Jenkins, 260-pound speed rushers. You're looking more along the lines of a, you know, B.J. Raji-esque gap plugger type
guys. Yeah, somebody that can just demand
whole
enough
blockers.
Attention
yeah.
that they just are taking everything. And that frees up, you know, that frees up your Jeremiah Tauchu. You can just sit there and shoot the gaps and have your zone blitzes and sort of bring heat from opposite direction. And then Georgia Tech's secondary isn't bad. They're okay.
Yeah. No, what I really wish is that we had a camera here so that we could see all of the – you're sort of breaking down the telestrator for us with your hands right here. But sadly, I'm the only one that can see it. But I can tell you, folks, he's really moving those X's and O's around in the air.
I'm gonna go with a person too. I'll follow you on this one.
All right.
NC State wide receiver Tobias Palmer. Mike Glennon was Bruce Feldman said he is a dark horse Heisman contender.
Ooh.
Yeah.
If Bruce Feldman says it, then I believe it.
And he says that as far as NFL scouts go, he is right up there with anybody else in college football.
Absolutely.
And if he who's he going to throw? He does not have a lot of proven targets right now. He has arguably the most experienced offensive line that he's had in a while,
mm-hmm.
but he really, really needs somebody, a pass catcher, to be his reliable option. TJ Graham was awesome last year. It was everything that Glennon needed, especially for his first season. And I didn't see enough out of Palmer last year to be entirely confident that, you know, he's going to necessarily be that guy. But I think that if he is, that's where, you know, NC State, I've got them slated as third behind Florida State and Clemson in the Atlantic. But, you know, they cause a couple upsets. They are a damn good team, especially with the secondary defense. Defense is a little questionable at linebacker, but – You know, it's Mike Glennon, if he's going to be that Heisman dark horse, needs somebody to catch passes. And in my eyes, Palmer's the number one candidate.
Yeah, and I think the NC State argument would be is, look, coming into last season, we said the same thing. T.J. Graham hadn't done anything until last season, and he connected with Mike Glennon and turned into a big player. And I would argue that Tobias Palmer has shown more so far in his career going into this season than what T.J. Graham had shown going into last season. And Mike Glennon played the first half of the season with an 800-pound load of pressure on his back by the name of, well, he's not 800 pounds, but Russell Wilson. Right. Get the metaphor I'm going with here. Yeah. And the guy delivered. I mean, I'm a big Mike Glennon fan. I think he absolutely delivered. I think people didn't appreciate how good of a job he did. But you're right, he's done it without a big-name receiver, and he may have to do that again this season. I'm curious what they produce at tight end. George Brian wasn't quite as good, I think, as people thought he would be last year. Asa Watson, Mario Carter, guys that have shown flashes, but they've been injury-prone. The line is a big thing, because to me, if the line plays to what it should play to, and if Mustafa Green can stay out of trouble, Tom O'Brien's doghouse, which has got like a Death Star tractor beam on him right now, if he can do that, then they can run the ball a lot better. And I like Mike Glennon a lot off of play action.
This might be this is a dated conversation, but still, for the diehard ACC fans, it might actually like this. Do you agree with me that when you look at George Brian and T.J. Graham, their sort of rise and fall was entirely based on the different styles? I think that George Brian, because he was that safety valve, mm-hmm. when Russell Wilson extends the play with his feet, mm-hmm. that takes somebody like T.J. Graham, straight speed route runner, a little more out of the equation and helps out somebody like Brian, who can make that eye contact with the quarterback and sort of run around and get in the open spots, where Glennon all of a sudden needs, he needs that pro-style wide receiver. He needs that speed guy that's going to run a big route so he can just sling it out there for him.
That's an interesting theory. I think what he needs this year is he needs a guy over like 5'10", because that's the thing. I mean, Tobias Palmer has got speed. He's not very big. He needs somebody in the 6'2", 6'3", range, something that Russell Wilson had. I mean, when his junior year, he had guys 6'3", 6'4".
How big was
passes.
Jarvis Byrd?
Byrd Green? I can't remember his name now. But Jarvis Byrd's still on the roster now, but I know you're talking about that other guy. He was like 6'3".
Owen Spencer was
about 6'3", or so. He had size. They don't have that, at least proven size right now on their roster. Now I feel like we're talking about NC State basketball.
No, we're not. Okay, on to you.
On to me. All right, well, you did the state of Virginia. I'll go with the state of Pennsylvania.
Ooh, explain.
Yeah, I got a little outside the box here. Well, I mean, without getting into the whole Penn State thing, just taking it strictly from a recruiting standpoint, Pitt's relationship to Penn State has been somewhere in between. In terms of in-state, to give an example for what some of your Tobacco Road listeners would appreciate, it's not quite like Duke going up against North Carolina in state football recruiting.
Right.
But it's not as close as NC State going up against UNC in state recruiting either. They're at a decided disadvantage most of the time. And that's a talent-rich state. And Pitt, for some of our listeners who might not be aware, will be joining the ACC next season.
So
there is a massive window of opportunity at this point, a huge window of opportunity for Pitt to make hay in the state of Pennsylvania in recruiting. And along those lines, Maryland, Virginia, Virginia Tech, Boston College, North Carolina, I would list them as NC State has recruited in that state. A lot of the ACC, all of a sudden, it's like this talent-rich state that really wasn't, maybe your third or fourth option as an ACC school to where you're going to go look for talent is there, and it's ripe for the taking. And if ACC programs can get in there and can establish a foothold before Penn State gets back on its feet, if it ever does, I think suddenly the ACC has added a big, chunk of additional talent that it can tap into in the future.
Yeah, if you're going to extend north and get Pittsburgh and Syracuse, the idea is, the footprint.
There you go, footprint.
Bing! The idea is that you're going to be able to open that up. And so not only, like you said, not only are you opening it up with the expansion, but now you've got the juggernaut who's down at least for 4 years and arguably maybe six more. I mean, it could be another 10 years before they're dominating that state. You think Pittsburgh's calling up Penn State now like, hey, you guys want to renew that non-conference rivalry?
Let's do it. Yeah. Let's do it. Maryland should be. Maryland should play Penn State all the time in football. They should call them back up and say,
aren't they playing them this year?
That's right. They are playing them this year. Well, Virginia is. Is Maryland playing them too? Virginia's playing them, I know.
Yeah.
Because I remember Mike London at ACC kickoff was like, I don't even know who I'm going to be playing. You know, don't know who's going to be on that roster.
The Yeah, that's a great opportunity. What's who else would be the competition from other? I mean, I guess the Big East schools.
Hey, Big Ten. I mean, Ohio State. You know, you look at Dorian Johnson, the offensive tackle, and this is one of those cases. He was a kid that looked like he was a pit lane, and then Penn State put a little pressure on him. Boom! All of a sudden, he's a Penn State commitment. Well, now he's back on the market, and the three schools that are after him are Pitt, Virginia Tech, and Ohio State. So I think the Big Ten schools are the ones that be the big players there. Still, even though Penn State's down, I think Ohio State in particular would be the one that could come in there and make some waves.
What's Jim's, by the way, phenomenal as far as knowing his recruiting stuff. I love to pick his brain about this.
Yeah.
Do you think that, sort of referencing earlier, do you think that Virginia Tech's – obviously, Mike London and Virginia have made a huge dent in sort of Virginia Tech's stranglehold of Virginia, and particularly the 757,
right.
Virginia Beach, Hampton Roads area. Do you think what are some other sort of places along the East Coast? Do you think you got the Pennsylvania? Mm-hmm. You've got, obviously, that area. What are some other spots where you'd like to see the ACC sort of move in regionally as far as recruiting goes?
Well, the other big one is the D.C. Baltimore corridor. That area produces a lot of talent, and you've seen in the past, you've seen Florida go in there and get guys. Illinois, back when Mike Locksley was their offensive coordinator, was coming in and getting guys like Aurelius Ben out of there. That area puts out a lot of talent. The Catholic schools there, Good Counsel, DeMatha, schools like that, Gilman, produced some very good numbers of Division I players. And that's been a problem. You know, Maryland doesn't have that cachet home state-wise that a North Carolina or a Virginia Tech does, where kids grow up wanting to play for Maryland. It's just not – I mean, you know the D.C. Baltimore area. It's like a one big urban area. It doesn't feel like a state per se.
Right, exactly.
You know, and you're so close to other states anyway. But if the ACC, led by Maryland, and Maryland I think is doing a pretty decent job of it.
Everyone laughs about the jerseys, but it's exactly what they're trying to do. It's, you know, they call it the Maryland Pride uniform.
Right.
Because that's what Randy Edsall wants to do. You know, you hear these – it's interesting. You hear these new coaches come into the ACC after not having been here. They get to these state schools, and I'm specifically thinking about Larry Fedora and Randy Edsall.
Build a fence around.
Yeah,
the state.
And that's exactly they realize. That's the first thing that they need to do is that the top recruits from what should be your greatest pipeline are going elsewhere.
Yeah, and along those lines, and like I said, Maryland with Locksley, really a lot of it has to do with Locksley is doing better in that Baltimore D.C. area. Virginia's doing well in that area as well. Is the state of North Carolina? That state is producing more and more talent. It's becoming more and more populated. It's the whole Rust Belt to Sun Belt effect and that sort of thing. But, I mean, you know the geography of the state. Charlotte is technically in the state of North Carolina.
It's South Carolina.
But it's an hour and a half from Clemson, and it's 2.5 to 3 hours from Chapel Hill and 3 hours from Raleigh. So, and, Murphy and all those areas out west are practically in Knoxville. So part of it's a little unfair to expect anybody. There's not enough wood out there to build a fence around the state of North Carolina. But the ACC schools have to do better than what they've been doing. And the SEC schools, again, Florida is probably one of the prime culprits. South Carolina as well are getting a lot of that top talent out of the state of North Carolina. It's becoming more of a hotbed. The ACC needs to do a better job of mining it.
All right, my last sort of thing.
All right.
This is a thing. It's conference realignment. I think that when we talk about what's going to define the 2012 season, I think we are at a standstill, but I don't think we're done from hearing these rumors. I don't think we're done until we find out what the Big 12 is going to do with this Champions Bowl contract. Are they going to require that there be a Big 12 championship game to match the SEC's championship game? If so, they're going to need two more teams, and boom, realignment rumors fire back up. Now, all of a sudden, since the ACC kickoff where they – where conference leadership mentioned the word Notre Dame about 30 times, it seems as though there's a little bit of a buzz to people considering partial membership again. And, now it's as though we are at least a sort of standstill or, everything's calmed down, but it's only going to take, one or two reliable rumors or discussions for all of this mess to get fired back up again.
I can't wait, Chip.
I bet so.
I'm so excited. I wish your listeners could see my face and just see the excitement that's all over it right now.
What do you foresee sort of for the next season? Do you think anything happens, or do you think we make it to the 2013 edition of Pittsburgh and Syracuse without any more changes?
I'm inclined to think that, but it kind of cuts into what I was going to say is one of my – this seems kind of strange, but it's an on-field thing. I look forward to November 8th, Virginia Tech, Florida State. If that game's big time, if Florida State in particular is big time this year, I think that has an effect on the conversations people start having again in May of next year, because I think a lot of Florida State's arguments and concerns are, can we be big time in the ACC? Can we do it with a little bit less money than SEC, with not the strength of schedule, say, than the Big 12 programs do? And can we make it into that, you know, the top four when they start doing that for the playoffs and that sort of thing. I think if Florida State, you know, goes into that Virginia Tech game and they're both top 10 programs and they come out on top and they end up, say, top five, I think that does a lot to sort of allay some of those fears. And then and that plays, again, a role when you get down to May or so. I also think people tend to forget, and I don't know, I guess it's because once you're so all-encompassing, people tend to forget you're there type mm-hmm. thing. But ESPN has contracts in both leagues. And I was not surprised at all when the Big 12 eventually put out those memos that showed the ESPN said, yeah, you guys want to add value to the contract, add Notre Dame. Otherwise, we're not interested. People are like, oh, well, if they add Florida State, they'll add $2-3 million. We have to think about who's paying the money out. It's ESPN for the most part, and you've just devalued their ACC contract, which, by the way, they're still, as long as they're 12 schools, obligated to pay out the same per year to everybody left, even if Florida State's not there.
Right.
So you devalue that, but now you're going to ask them to pay more for the same school that you just took away to devalue one of their contracts. Well, why would they want to pay you more for it? So, you know, I don't mean to get all, you know, kind of off the track, but I think ESPN is a huge player in this. We talk about what the Big 12 wants, but in a lot of ways, as Gene DeFilippo once said, it's what ESPN wants. And if ESPN really doesn't want this to happen and wants things to sort of settle down and wants the ACC to go to 14, then I think the ACC stays at 14.
And I do think that that game up in Blacksburg could be huge.
Oh, yeah.
It could be a lot of – I mean, that could be –
It could be, or it could be a couple of 7-3 underachievers or whatever. I don't know what point of the season it is. But, you know, I mean, it could be a couple of 2-3 loss underachievers, like 16-17 in the country. I mean, I don't want to sound like Debbie Downer with this, but, you know, again, we've been burned before.
What's your – you have any just general ACC title game pick?
I mean, I went bland. I went Virginia Tech, Florida State.
I thought about this. I think Florida State goes up to Blacksburg, takes the L, but because they beat Clemson, mm-hmm. maintains the, you know, they maintain the tiebreaker, so they win the Atlantic with a one-loss conference record, get their revenge over Virginia Tech in the ACC title game, go to the Orange Bowl, but no national championship.
All right, I can see that.
You can see that?
I can totally see that happening.
Any other dark...
Of course, I could also see Gio Bernard winning ACC Player of the Year, and apparently I'm the only member of the media that could see that happening.
Were you the only one for Lamar Miller, or was there someone else?
No, I never found who it was. No one else was willing to stand with me, but Lamar Miller last year got 2 votes. So, and I felt pretty good. I thought he had a better season than E.J. Manuel did, who was the preseason player of the year. So
the you know, Lamar Miller's on one of the like primary rookies featured on HBO's Hard Knocks this season for the Dolphins.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, and so because I think they'll do that Miami-born, Miami-educated, you know, playing
sure.
for the Dolphins. He's already gotten a lot of camera time, and I think he'll get some more. But anyway, Jim, thank you so much for coming into the Hustle Dome. I hope you enjoyed your stay. Jim will join us once again on the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast, I am sure, if you'd like to come back.
Certainly would, if the money's right.
You can follow him on Twitter at ACC Sports. Remember, go to accsports.com for all the latest on the ACC from Jim and his army of employees / interns /
freelancers, contributors,
all of that. Anyway, remember, keep tuning in. We're going to be rolling out new conference previews at least every other day. And we're really looking forward to hearing your feedback. You can email it at podcast@cbsinteractive.com. Let us know what you liked, what you didn't like. And remember, you can get all of the cbsports.com college football podcasts in the iTunes store for $3.99. Just go up there, subscribe, and we'll deliver them to you every time there's a new one. Thanks so much for tuning in.